Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for listening. Well, how long did it take you to get into work today? Did the rain extend that already long commute? I know it did for me. We all know how rough South Florida traffic can be, and a new report puts things into light. The average commuter loses 100 hours of time in gridlock on our roadways each year. I said that right, 100 hours. That's 12th worst in the country, according to the Miami Urban Future Initiative. Their report is called, and it's apropos, Stuck in Traffic. The report's authors, Stephen Pettigo and Richard Florida, argue in order for South Florida to become a leading hub for innovation, we have to improve how we get around. Mr. Pettigo joins us now from the studios of WGBO in Newark, New Jersey. Mr. Pettigo, thanks so much for joining us today.
Louis, thanks for having me.
What are the factors that make South Florida among the worst for traffic congestion in the country? I mean, I do it every day. I'm spending more than 2 hours a day on the road. I can guess, but please tell me what you guys found.
Yeah, sure. So I think one of the challenges that when we look at Miami, and particularly not just Miami, we're talking about the Miami region, so it's Miami-Dade, that's Broward County and Palm Beach counties. You know, the challenge I think that makes us essentially stuck on the roadways is that nearly three-fourths of all of our commuters are driving to work. And if you think about how that sort of ranks in comparatively to some of our peers, you know, that's way more drivers and those in New York and San Francisco. And then when we look at the number of folks that are even taking public transportation and walking and biking to work, our numbers are also quite low. So that is one of the biggest issues, is that many of us are just in our cars on the freeway.
You know, when we think of congestion, I mean, really, are we talking about just the amount of time that is spent in gridlock traffic?
Yeah. So the study that looked at congestion was looking at the amount of time that you and I spend sort of every day sort of commuting back and forth to work and the time that we lose. And as you noted in the introduction, you know, Miami has some of the 12th worst traffic congestion, and that's about 100 hours of productive time that you and I lose every year in terms of congestion. And if you think about the economic output of that, right? Overall, across the region, that costs us about $4 billion, and that's comparatively to places like Atlanta and Houston, other places that are also known for really just sort of being stuck and unmobile.
You know, it's not just that we're heavily dependent on our cars. That's a big thing here in South Florida, but it's also the fact that the majority of us, we're traveling solo. It's just one person per car. South Florida has the highest percentage of single vehicle drivers of anywhere in the country, right?
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, if you look at places like San Francisco and New York, these are places that are, as we want to think about ourselves as a growing startup sector, these are places that are attracting startup talent. These folks are getting people out of the car, carpooling, taking public transportation, walking and biking to work. And it's something that we're going to have to think about as well as we start to think about other modes of transportation.
I want to know, what is it they're doing that is convincing people that carpooling is cool, that share rides is the way to go? I mean, what are we doing wrong?
Well, I think it's also, there's a couple things here, right? One, I think it's just the fact that obviously when you look at those two cities, they have a much more robust public transportation system, right? And so people, it is a part of a culture in terms of taking public transportation. You know, I think the other thing is that when we look at the number of people that are biking and walking to work, those urban environments are just a bit more situated for that in terms of being able to get people off the streets. And so one of the things I think that we have to think about in Miami is as we look at development and we look at the densification of our communities and our downtowns, is thinking about how we design our areas to facilitate us more people to bike and walk to work. So there is a bit of the design around the physical infrastructure as well that sort of supports that as well.
Define what is congestion pricing?
Congestion pricing, so for instance, here in New York, one of the things that has happened with is that congestion pricing is charging a small fee to commuters that enter into a particular zone. So here, for instance, in New York, in Manhattan, there will be a particular fee that users or drivers that will pay. And so one of the things behind congestion pricing, or the idea behind congestion pricing, is that if we can make that put a premium on it, it will encourage people maybe not to take a car alone, maybe to think about taking public transportation, thinking about carpooling, et cetera.
But part of that too, isn't it, is to also discourage people who are not driving to work during rush hour to stay off the roads during rush
hour. That's right, as well, right? So essentially you're wanting to change behavior. And one of the things that's interesting about the idea of congestion pricing, particularly as you look at it in New York and other cities and London, et cetera, is that much of the dollars and much of the funds that are being raised by congestion pricing will be going back into building a better infrastructure and improving public transportation, putting better bikeways. And so it is a bit of this way to think about how we can use those funds to even encourage and build a better physical environment, as we were sort of talking about, to encourage more people to do to bike and walk to work, et cetera.
Do we know if that works? Do we know if it works if you try to discourage people by basically penalizing them? If you're going to drive around on rush hour and you're not going to work, we're going to fine you.
Well, I think we could look at it as a fine. We could also look at it since that you're paying a premium to be on the roadway at that time, right? I mean, there's another way, again, if we're trying to think about how to change behavior. I mean, one of the things is that congestion pricing, if you look across the world, many folks have suggested that it has had a dramatic impact in London in terms of reducing congestion, et cetera.
What is the extent that ride sharing has helped change, maybe for the better or the worse, traffic, especially in areas like South Florida? But I don't know if you'd seen it anywhere else in the world, if ride sharing is having an impact.
Well, ride sharing, I mean, it's an interesting, the thought about ride sharing when we first went down that path was the idea that ride sharing would encourage people to consider, either taking carpooling with their colleagues or carpooling with their companions, et cetera. But one of the things that we know about ride sharing, and some many, many studies have sort of suggested this, is that in fact the Ubers, the Lyfts of the world, particularly in other places like New York, et cetera, have actually increased the amount of cars on the roadway. So one of the things that we have to think about with ride sharing is how do we balance that? Because when we look at the impact that it's having on public transportation overall, it is eating into some of the public transportation ride share numbers.
That's interesting. So more Ubers and Lyfts in the road, it's adding more cars to the road, but not necessarily encouraging people to use them, especially in situations where they could be carpooling, to get them out of, because the problem in South Florida is, the biggest problem is too many cars on the road to have just one person in them.
That's right. And sometimes what's happened with ride sharing is that the cost of ride sharing is very, a lot of times, not overly much more inexpensive than maybe taking public transportation from a long distance. And so what that is, the impact of that has had, is encouraging people again to select maybe a ride sharing platform as opposed to taking public transportation.
South Florida is also among the highest economic inequality that you'll find in any major metropolitan area. In what ways does that issue of driving inequality and traffic congestion come together here?
Well, I think one of the things that we know from a previous study, in fact, is that when we looked at income inequality, actually, South Florida has the highest income inequality in the country, on par with places like Colombia, for instance, countries like Colombia. So it is a challenge of dealing with some of these income inequality issues that we're looking at. But, I think that the idea of income inequality and the access to transit and the access to people that are commuting long distance obviously all comes together, because one of the things that we know is that our region is becoming much more expensive for people to live in. And as it becomes much more expensive, that means that folks are moving further and further out, extending their commutes, possibly having to commute alone, having less access to public transportation. So the two are very much linked in terms of the affordability challenges, income inequality, and the access to transportation.
I'm talking with Stephen Pedigo, director of the NYU Shack Urban Lab. He co-authored the new report from the Miami Urban Future Initiative, examining South Florida's traffic congestion problems. We continually rank among the worst places for gridlock in the country. He's joining us again from the studios of WBGO in Newark, New Jersey. So, Stephen, an essential part of this equation, you kept mentioning, of course, is the public transportation ridership. We've seen a continued decline in bus ridership in South Florida over the past several years. Less than 3% use public transit in the region. So how does that compare to, let me start with this, how does that compare to other major metropolitan areas? Are we good, bad? Where do we fit in that?
So as you noted, it's about 3% of Miami commuters use public transportation. As you noted, again, that is declining. And if you think about that, that's nearly compared to a fifth of San Franciscans and a third of New Yorkers that use public transportation. So our public transportation use is quite low when we compare it to some of our peers, particularly those peers that we're wanting to compete with in the knowledge-based economy. You know, those folks, those regions and communities that are attracting startups and technology firms. We are well below those communities.
What do we know about the usage of public transit relative to social class? Who's using, in South Florida, who's using public transportation?
It tends to be, when we look at the folks that are using public transportation in South Florida, it tends to be folks on the lower economic strata. So which is comparatively different from folks, for instance, when we look at some of our, again, those peer cities where we see high transportation use, right? Again, there is this sort of culture, culture in Miami where people are commuting, particularly at the upper levels of our income strata, commuting alone.
And I wonder what that is. I mean, again, is there something that they're doing in D.C. or in San Francisco where they get these higher, you know, this higher usage of public transit? You know, is there some stigma to riding a bus, to riding the train?
Well, I guess, I mean, that would be something to talk to, I guess, the folks that are running the transit authority in terms of how they're sort of positioning public transportation use in the region. I think one of the things that we know is that in those other regions in San Francisco and New Yorkers, there's a variety of different transportation, right? So you can take the subway, you can take the commuter rail. And in Miami, right, one of the things that we know is that most of our public transportation is around buses. And folks, a lot of times when they think about the use of buses, think about buses as being somewhat inefficient. So as we think even about how we improve our public transportation system in Miami, is it about thinking about the use of bus rapid transit? Is it about thinking about how we can close that last mile, right? So for instance, you know, you and I may live a mile or 2 miles away from a bus stop, which makes it discourage us from perhaps wanting to take that public transportation because it's such a difficult thing to get to. So we have to think about, you know, not only the different types of public transportation, we also have to think about how we also close that last mile piece as well.
You know, the other thing too is this, I mean, there's walking, cycling, and now we see a lot of scooters, these electric scooters around downtown Miami anyway. That, again, still less than half of the number of people who use public transit. Have we seen places around the country, around the world, which have incentivized, you know, people getting to work on other forms of transportation? Again, walking, biking, something else.
I don't know that we've seen other places incentivize it, but I think one of the things about that you just sort of mentioned with this idea of scooters and micromobility is that this idea of putting an array of different types of transportation options out there and then in trying to encourage people to use it. So, for instance, you know, even thinking about the biking, scooters, again, those are ways that we can sort of think about how we close that last mile. How difficult it is to get to the transport to the bus stop? How difficult it is to get to the rail stop? If we can, again, get folks out of their cars and thinking about how we can make it more efficient, that's one of the leading pieces of getting people to think about the use of public transportation and willing to get out of their cars and sort of think about how they get to work in different manners.
You propose an interesting solution. It could prove very interesting in the coming years here. Invest in water-based transit. So explain what that means and how you've seen it work in other places like New York.
Sure. I mean, one of the greatest success stories, perhaps, of the transportation sectors here in New York has been the rising number of folks that are taking the ferry systems. And so the de Blasio administration, starting actually with the Bloomberg administration, but into the de Blasio administration, has made extreme efforts in terms of getting folks to use the ferry systems here in New York. So you can imagine that if we could think about how we use that similar system in greater Miami as a way to get people, again, out of the car, different types of, and offer a different array of different transportation modes, it could, again, maybe start to get us shorten up some of these commutes and get people out of their cars.
You know, what can you tell me, though, about what they were doing in New York, and did people buy into it right away?
Yeah, I mean, people bought in. I think it took some time, but I think one of the things that when you think about a ferry system, right, particularly here in New York, is that the ferry system in New York, and in terms of cost advantages, right? It's much cheaper to put in a ferry system than it is to put in a rail system. And so it was a transportation system that was able to essentially grow as the city was growing, right? So you've got people we've got ferries that are going on parts of the different parts of the borough, different boroughs across New York that we had not had transportation access. Again, it was one of those things of trying to connect further areas and further boroughs out or further in neighborhoods out that didn't have that complete access to that perfect rail system. So in Miami, we could think of that sort of that same idea for sure.
I have noticed in different parts of Miami now a lot of housing going up right next to some of the stations, nearby the stations of the Metro Rail. This also is something that it could be used to help incentivize people taking more rail, taking more buses, is if you have the housing. Because as you said, sometimes the bus stops are far away, but if we have the housing nearby, do you see that happening more than just cities trying to put buses or trying to put transportation near homes? Is that they're just building homes near the transportation?
Yeah, absolutely. It's this idea of densification, right? Using the idea that you're already, even just building more housing on the transit or near the transit nodes that you have is another way to increase public transportation use, right? So again, as you said before, make that commute to the bus stop shorter, make it more efficient for me to get on the bus in the morning. And so lots of cities are doing this, particularly, look at places like Austin, Texas, Portland, Oregon, Denver. Particularly Denver has done a really good job of this under the leadership of Mayor Hancock in terms of thinking about the densification of its commercial corridors, of its transit corridors. And that, in my mind, not only does lots of things, right? It makes people's commutes shorter. It provides a sense of potentially building a greater sense of community. It also, in a sense, thinks about how we can even eventually sort of save people dollars in terms of the amount of dollars they're spending in terms of commuting every day.
I wanted to finish up with this one. It's something interesting here, at least in downtown Miami. Ford has a number of vehicles that they are testing now. These are the autonomous vehicles driving around. You could see them going in all these loops as they're trying to teach the car how to drive in Miami. Good luck. But, the future of autonomous vehicles, is this something that could help reduce congestion? Do you think this will play a role, good or bad?
I think it's a bit of a mixed, in my mind, I think it's a little bit of a mixed bag. I think if we're thinking about autonomous vehicles, right, it will be this question about how do we use autonomous vehicles for more than just that singular car, right? So can we get, again, more than just that one individual in an autonomous vehicle? So can we use that technology for buses or for shuttles to greater transportation systems or for short distances? I think it will, there's lots of folks who have suggested, well, perhaps it actually will put more cars on the roadway, right? Because at that point, you can sort of sit back and relax and sort of, and get things done in the commute as opposed to being, in terms of being behind the wheel. So I think it's still, in my mind, a bit of a mixed story.
If more people are riding in one, you have car sharing, or, carpooling, then I could see it maybe as a positive. But if it is still one person per car, yeah, you're right. At least I'll be able to do some work in it, but who knows? We've been talking with Stephen Pedigo, director of the NYU Shack Urban Lab. Again, he co-authored the new report from the Miami Urban Future Initiative, examining South Florida's traffic congestion problems. Again, South Florida, the whole of South Florida, we continually rank among the worst for gridlock. I don't have to tell you. You know you're in the car a lot. You spend quite a bit of time driving around. We're losing about 100 hours a year. So that's how bad it is. He's joining us again from the studios of WBGO in Newark, New Jersey. Stephen, it's such a pleasure. Thank you for the insight.
Thanks for having me.
And again, we've been hearing from you on social media. We'd love to hear your thoughts. If you live in Palm Beach County, Broward, Miami-Dade, tell us about, your experience in gridlock. And if you're doing public transportation, what's that like? We heard from James, who tweeted at us, I can tell you in Broward County, the webpage is terrible at explaining the bus routes timetables. I've been hearing that a lot, too. All right, still to come, we're going to stay on transit. Could a bus system redesign be part of the solution? We're going to hear from the Transit Alliance on a major project coming up ahead.